This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy and features real testimonials.
This was our first time trying therapy, and honestly, it was long overdue. Looking back, we just wish we had started sooner.
Regain's qualified therapists help couples when they can't get there on their own.
We thought it was intimacy issues, but Andrea helped us uncover a deeper root cause we hadn't even realized was there.
Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. Regain, couples therapy that works.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust. Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get one full year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free.
Visit endurancewarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's endurancewarranty.com.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
Story 1, and I grew up outside Topeka, Kansas. Real flat, nothing much going on. At 15, I got my first job working for this local hardware place, mostly doing stock and pickups. The guy who ran it, Keith, was ex-military, probably mid-50s back then. Real quiet, always had this strange twitch in his right eye, like he was remembering something he'd rather forget. One Friday afternoon, right before closing, Keith tosses me the keys to the box truck and tells me we need to pick up some overflow shelving from the storage unit. Only this wasn't like some U-Haul rental spot. This was miles out of town, middle of nowhere, and as we pulled up, I could already tell it wasn't a normal warehouse. The place was a low, flat concrete building surrounded by chain-link fence. No windows, just one massive rusted door and some gravel. Keith parks, gets out, lights a cigarette, and says, "This used to be a missile silo back in the day. We lease it cheap now. Go figure." I thought he was kidding until we went inside. It was freezing in there, even though it was pushing 90 outside. The air was dry, smelled like dust and burnt wires. Rows of metal shelves with old signage and boxed product lined the walls. Nothing creepy yet. But then Keith walks over to this rusted side panel that's bolted shut, pulls out a pocket knife, and pops it open like he's done it 100 times. Behind it, there's this metal door with a busted up security keypad. He grins. "Want to see the real place?" I didn't say anything, but I followed him. He opens the door and we walk into this corridor that looks like it hadn't been touched since the Cold War. Bare concrete, peeling paint, no lights but our flashlights. We walk maybe 50 feet in and find this central chamber. Totally empty, just bare floor and walls. It could have been an office or a rec room once, but there was nothing left. Then we hit the stairs. Not normal stairs. This was a winding steel staircase bolted to the walls of a vertical shaft that went down farther than my flashlight could reach. It echoed when you moved, like the whole silo was hollow underneath us. "Come on," Keith says, like we're just going into a basement. We go down 2 levels. Each one has big blast doors, thick enough to stop a war. Rooms filled with old desks, dead monitors, switches labeled in stenciled military font. Half in Russian, weirdly enough. Some of the instruments still had little needles twitching, like something deep underground was still humming. On the second sublevel, the hallway ends in this massive round room, maybe 60 feet wide. And right in the center is a circular shaft dropping straight down, maybe 30 feet across, filled with black water. No railing, no cover, just a hole in the earth. Keith tosses a bolt into it, and it takes almost 4 seconds before we hear the splash. "That used to be the missile cradle," he says, voice echoing. I ask him how deep it is. 7 stories. Rest is flooded. They sealed the lower decks in the 80s. Too unstable. Then off to the side, we find another corridor. Doors half open. Inside, there's this tiny chamber, like a sub-control room. Panels all dead, except for this single monitor in the corner. The screen's cracked and flickering, just flashing static. But there's a camera feed cycling through what looks like lower levels. I'm thinking, how the hell is this powered? Keith's staring at the screen. He leans in close, squints, then says, That's not right. What isn't? He doesn't answer. He just backs up and stares at the monitor like it just told him his own death date. I look, and I swear to God, one of the camera angles, showing a lower corridor completely submerged in water, has something moving. At first I thought it was a trick of the light, like interference, but it moved again. Dark shape, slow, not swimming, gliding, like it was walking underwater. Then the feed cuts, just static. Keith grabs my arm hard enough to hurt, and says, "We're leaving. Now." No arguing, no jokes. He just yanks me out of there like the place is about to collapse. We don't take the stairwell. We go out a secondary ladder hatch that leads straight up through a rusted emergency shaft and come out behind the building. He doesn't say a word the whole ride back. Next day I ask him about it, what he saw. He just looks at me and says, "Some places don't forget what they were built for." I quit 2 weeks later. Couldn't sleep after that. Not because of what I saw, but because I kept thinking there were no cameras down there, no power, nothing should have been working. So what the hell was feeding that monitor? And what was that thing in the water, walking like it knew the cameras were still watching? I told myself maybe it was an old loop, old footage. Maybe it wasn't live. But sometimes I wonder if something's still down there, below the flood line. Something that used to wait for orders, something that never got them. All I know is, Keith sealed that bolt panel shut the following week and said nobody was allowed back in there. No one ever asked why. Story 2. I don't tell this story much because it sounds fake, like I wouldn't believe it if I hadn't lived it. But it's been stuck in my head for years, so here goes. This was back when I was working graveyard shifts at a warehouse in Tulare County, Central California. I didn't have a car yet, so I used to walk the 3 miles home. Normally took me about 30 minutes. Most of it was rural roads. No sidewalks, just gravel shoulders and fields on either side. There was this small cemetery about halfway between work and home, tucked behind an old chain link fence and a couple rows of eucalyptus trees. Nothing big. Local place, maybe 20 headstones. The thing is, if I cut through it, I could shave 5 minutes off my walk. I'd done it maybe 20 times before this happened. It was just convenient. Never saw anyone there, not even during the day. Felt like one of those places people forgot existed. This particular night, it was in late October, I clocked out at 10:55, just like usual. Stars were out, air smelled like alfalfa and dust. I remember I was sore, dragging my feet, headphones in. I crossed the road, slipped through the gap in the fence, and started across the cemetery like normal. About halfway through, I took my earbuds out. Don't know why. I think I just felt off. You know that feeling, like something's watching you? Not paranoia, exactly. Just that weird little signal your brain sends that something's wrong with the environment. Everything was dead quiet except for the trees creaking. I kept walking, but I slowed down a bit. Then I heard this noise from near the trees at the back of the lot. Thought it was maybe a deer or a coyote. We get those out here sometimes, especially near the fields. I stopped, turned toward the trees. Couldn't see much, just blackness between the trunks. but I heard it again. This soft rustling and a weird kind of clicking sound, like claws on concrete, except slower, uneven. Coyote, I whispered to myself. It's just a coyote. But I didn't move. My body just refused. And then it stepped out. It wasn't a coyote. At first I thought it was a guy, maybe someone homeless or high. He was pale, thin, crouched low to the ground, like really low. Palms flat on the grass, elbows bent backward like a spider. I remember the way his head tilted when he saw me. Not fast, just wrong, like it didn't have joints. His face looked almost human, but stretched. Too long. The eyes were black and round like marbles. No whites at all. And he was naked, I think. But his skin was so pale it reflected the moonlight. Every inch of him looked smooth and tight, like it had been stretched over bone. I didn't say anything. Didn't scream. I just froze. He stayed like that, crouched maybe 30 feet away, staring. Then fast, he scuttled forward on all fours. Not like a person crawling, he moved like he'd never walked upright in his life. Knees out, back arched, palms slapping the dirt. I turned and ran. I don't think I've ever moved that fast. I sprinted through the rest of the cemetery, tore through the fence gap, and bolted down the road. My lungs were burning. I kept expecting to hear those hands smacking the pavement behind me. I didn't dare look back. I didn't even stop when I got to the gate at my apartment complex. I ran straight to my door, hands shaking so bad I couldn't get the key in at first. When I finally got inside, I locked everything. Deadbolt, chain, even shoved a chair under the doorknob like I was in a movie. I didn't sleep that night. Didn't even take my shoes off. Just sat on the floor with my back to the wall and stared at the door until the sun came up. I never walked home again. I bought a used motorcycle the next week. Didn't care what it cost. Never cut through that cemetery again either. Hell, I don't even drive past it anymore if I can help it. I told my roommate about it the next day. He laughed, said I probably saw a raccoon or something. You were tired, man, he said. Your brain filled in the blanks. I wanted to believe that. I still do. But I wasn't tired. I was wide awake. And raccoons don't move like that.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy. Let's be honest. Loving your partner doesn't mean you always like them, and guess what? That's normal. Regain offers couples therapy that's flexible, affordable, and 100% online. Whether you're reconnecting or working through conflict, Regain is here to support you both. See why people wish they'd try couples therapy sooner. Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. That's regain.com/couplespod.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip. When it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Arr, fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
People don't move like that either. I've searched online. Closest thing I can find is the rake. You know, that creepy internet thing. Pale humanoid on all fours. Some say it's a demon, some say a cryptid. Whatever. I don't know what I saw. All I know is it saw me and it wanted to get closer. That's the part that still messes me up. The way it moved toward me, like it was testing how close it could get before I ran, like it was playing. Sometimes I wonder what would have happened if I hadn't noticed it, if I'd kept my earbuds in, if I hadn't turned around, or worse, if I had frozen up completely. Anyway, that's it. One night, one moment, and it's stuck with me ever since. No one ever believes this story, but I know what I saw, and if you ever walk home alone, especially at night, don't cut through places people are supposed to rest. Some things don't stay resting. Story 3. I live in Klamath Falls, Southern Oregon. Not exactly a hotspot for much, but it's got what I need. Cheap rent, solitude, and endless wilderness to disappear into on weekends. I do solo hikes, mostly. Old trails, some barely maintained. The more remote, the better. This happened in early October 2 years ago. The trees were just starting to rust, and the nights were getting that sharp edge to them. I'd driven east into Fremont-Wenema National Forest, planning a 3-day trek through some overgrown ridgelines and abandoned logging roads. I'd studied the maps. There was an old silver mining operation from the 1880s somewhere around Dead Horse Butte. No tourist marker, just a note in a historical society book I found at the Klamath Library. Said it was sealed up after some kind of collapse. That sealed it for me. I loaded up my pack and drove out Friday morning. By the second night, I was maybe 15 miles from the closest paved road. I hadn't seen anyone, not even a footprint, since I left my truck. No cell service, no sounds beyond wind and the occasional hawk. I loved it. But around dusk that second night, I stumbled on something that changed everything. The terrain had flattened out a bit, and I noticed a strange, regular mound in the underbrush. Brushing aside the pine needles and vines, I found what looked like the warped timbers of an old entrance. Half collapsed, but not entirely. A mine shaft, horizontal, not vertical. I crouched down and shined my flashlight in. It went back maybe 30 feet, then turned sharply right into the mountain. The air that came out of it was cooler than the outside, but not stale. Almost fresh. I know how that sounds, but I've been in old bunkers and mines before. They usually reek of mildew and trapped air. This one didn't, just cold, clean, and dry. I stood there for maybe a full minute, just listening. Then I heard a soft clicking from inside, like two small stones tapping together. Once, pause, then again. Not fast, not urgent, rhythmic. It stopped, then started again, closer. I felt something tighten in my gut. Probably an animal, I said aloud, though my voice sounded wrong in the quiet. I should have walked away, should have just marked it on GPS and reported it later, but I crawled inside. I told myself it was just curiosity. Honestly, it felt more like I was being pulled in. The air got colder as I went in, and the beam of my flashlight kept catching little flecks of mica in the walls, shiny, almost wet-looking. At the turn, the tunnel narrowed. I had to duck slightly, and that's when I noticed something. The tapping sound had stopped. I paused and turned off the flashlight for a second, just to listen. Dead silence. Not even wind outside. That kind of silence that makes your ears ring. I flicked the light back on and took one more step forward. That's when I heard the whisper. It wasn't a voice exactly. It was a soft, wet breath right next to my left ear. No words, just breathe. I spun around, heart slamming, shining the light back the way I came. Nothing, no movement. The mine was empty, but my hands were trembling now. Then something touched my back. I leapt forward instinctively, smashing my shoulder into the tunnel wall. The flashlight fell and rolled into the dirt. The beam spun wildly, briefly catching something just at the edge of the corner. I swear to God, there was a shape, not an animal, not a shadow. Something crouched, too tall to be human but hunched low, like it had been waiting just above the ceiling beam. Its eyes, if they were eyes, reflected the light in a dull gray glow. No pupils, just fog marbles. I didn't even think. I dropped my pack, grabbed the light, and ran. I crawled, scrambled, scraping my knees and elbows on jagged rocks as I fought my way out. I swear I could feel it chasing me, just behind, never touching, but always one breath away. I didn't stop running until I hit the edge of the ridge where my camp was. Only then did I glance behind me. Nothing. No movement. Just pine trees shifting in the breeze. I stood there for maybe 10 minutes, panting and sweating in the cold air, waiting for something to crawl out of the woods. Never did. I broke camp immediately. Didn't sleep. Hiked through the night with a headlamp and a small fixed-blade knife clenched in my hand like a toddler clutches a teddy bear. I didn't stop until I saw my truck again around 10 the next morning. I never told anyone until now. I didn't even go back for my pack. 3 weeks later, I got an envelope in the mail. No return address. Inside was a single photograph. black and white, like something out of an old miner's journal. It showed the same mine entrance I'd found, but not overgrown, clean, framed by old wooden beams. Standing just inside was a figure, tall, thin, with one hand resting on the wall, and its head bent sideways at an unnatural angle, like it was listening. The note on the back said only, "You weren't supposed to go in." "That mine?" I looked again on the maps later. "It's not listed, not even as a historical ruin. It's just gone. And the spot where I found it?" I went back 3 months later. Nothing there, no timbers, no hole in the earth, just flat ground overgrown with ferns. I know what I saw. I know something touched me, and I know I left something down in that tunnel. Story 4. I'll never forget the sound the chain made when it fell off the gate. That dull, hollow clatter still hits me sometimes when I'm trying to fall asleep. I'm not an explorer, not one of those YouTube urban legend types, but back in 2016, I was staying with my cousin Mark in Western Massachusetts after I dropped out of school. I just needed time to think. That area, Franklin County, is full of dead textile towns and forest that goes on forever. Mark worked long shifts at the mill, and I was bored out of my mind most days. So I'd go running in the mornings, trying to get in shape, clear my head. On the third morning, I ran a little farther than usual. There's this narrow road called Old Whitaker that disappears into the woods. I turned down it just to see where it went. It was dead quiet. No cars, no houses, just cracked pavement and trees bending overhead. About a mile in, I saw the fence, rusted chain link, barely standing in some places, covered in old yellow, no trespassing signs. And right behind it, like something out of a horror movie, was a brick building that looked like it had been rotting since the 40s. Vines crawling up the sides, windows busted out, a cupola collapsing inward. I slowed to a stop. There was a heavy metal gate in the middle of the fence, chained shut. A faded sign bolted to one post said, "Whately State Hospital, closed 1973. I didn't even touch the gate. I just stared at it for a few seconds. Then I turned around and jogged back to the house. At dinner that night, I mentioned it offhand to Mark. "Hey, you know that old hospital down Old Whitaker? Creepy place." He froze for a second, then said, "You didn't go in, right?" Number just saw it from the road. Mark leaned in a little. "Don't go back there. Place is cursed. I'm serious." I laughed, waiting for the joke, but he just kept chewing. I asked him what he meant, and he said, "There's stories. Kids went missing up there in the 80s, before they really locked it up. Whole lot of bad stuff in that place. You'd be better off not messing with it." Of course, that just made me more curious. The next morning, I brought a flashlight with me. I don't know what I was planning, just figured I'd look through the gate again, maybe walk around the perimeter. I told myself I wasn't going in. It was overcast and gray that day. The whole forest felt heavier, like the trees were watching. I reached the gate around 7:30 a.m. The chain was still wrapped around the bars, but this time, I swear to God, it was unlatched. Just loosely looped through, not locked at all. I thought maybe a maintenance crew had come out or something, but when I looked around, there were no tire tracks, no footprints, nothing but wet leaves. So I reached out and pulled the chain. Clang! The gate groaned open about 2 feet before jamming on a root. I stepped through. Right away, it felt wrong. The silence inside the fence wasn't normal silence. It was thick, dense. Even my breathing sounded like it was bouncing off walls that weren't there. I walked toward the building. Every window I passed was black inside, like the place was swallowing light. When I reached the front steps, I shone my flashlight into the open doorway. The beam flickered, even though the batteries were new. There was graffiti on the inside walls, pentagrams, names, lots of profanity. But there was also this weird series of handprints, low down, like a child had dipped their hands in tar and pressed them to the wall one after another, all the way down the hall. I should have left. Instead, I took one step inside. The smell hit me right away. Wet stone, mold, and something faintly metallic, like old blood. I was aiming the flashlight toward the ceiling when I heard the door slam behind me. Hard. I spun around and ran back, heart pounding, but the door was wide open. That's when I noticed the hall was different. The graffiti was gone. So were the handprints. Instead, the walls were lined with peeling paint, and there were old framed photos hanging crookedly, black and white portraits of nurses and doctors, all looking dead-eyed into the camera. I took a step back. Nope. Nope. I turned to leave, but when I stepped out the front door, I wasn't outside. I was in a hallway, same hospital, but the door I'd just walked through was now another interior door, solid, institutional, with a wired glass window. It was like the building had shifted around me. No, I whispered. That's when I heard the voice. Faint, female, singing a lullaby, off key, slowing down like a record winding to a stop. I froze. I could feel my knees starting to shake. Then footsteps, fast, coming from behind the door at the far end of the hallway. Hello? I called out, stupidly. The singing stopped. The door burst open, and something came through it, fast and low. I didn't see it clearly, just a blur of white limbs, jerking wrong, like it was being yanked forward by invisible strings. The sound it made was all wrong too, not like a scream or growl, but like a baby choking on water. I dropped the flashlight. I ran. I ran like something was about to grab the back of my neck and pull me down. I didn't know where I was going, just tearing through hallways, through half-collapsed rooms, smashing through rotted doors. Somehow, don't ask me how, I crashed through a window and landed outside. The air hit me like a slap. I scrambled up, covered in cuts, and sprinted back toward the gate. The hospital looked normal behind me now, decayed, covered in graffiti again, like it had snapped back. The gate was still open. I didn't look back once. I didn't say anything to Mark that night. I packed up and left the next morning, told him I was heading back to New York. He didn't ask why. I've never been back to Massachusetts, never even Googled the place. I don't want to know if anyone else saw what I did. I don't want to know if I was supposed to. Story 5. I've worked rocks most of my life. Not glamorous, I know, but when you're a field geologist, solitude becomes routine. I did my graduate work out of Reno, mostly central and western Nevada. It's easy to lose cell reception, and even easier to forget you're on the same planet as everyone else. There's one incident I never talk about, mostly because no one believes me when I try. You'd think I'd be more afraid of bears or mountain lions out there. But no, what happened on the west side of the Gabs Valley Range? That changed me. This was 2017, early summer. I was tracing volcanic tuff sequences across a range barely marked on BLM maps. The kind of terrain where the road ends hours before you park. I had my gear, topo maps, in a 40 sidearm for cats, and a cooler full of sandwich meat and Gatorade. Standard stuff. I'd been hiking since dawn, taking notes, sampling where the outcrops made sense. I crested a ridge just before noon and spotted something across the basin. Looked like a farm, which didn't make any damn sense. No roads, no fences, no power lines. Just a patch of green in a sea of dirt and rock. I figured I'd stumbled onto an old homestead. Maybe someone tried to live off-grid back in the 60s, so I hiked down to check it out. About halfway there, the smell hit me. Skunky, strong, weed, and a lot of it. Outdoor grow, no question. My stomach dropped. That's BLM land. Totally illegal, and the kind of thing people protect with bullets. I hit the dirt behind a washout and crawled to get a better view. Sure enough, five or six rows of plants, irrigation lines, tarp structures, and a water tank. I was maybe 200 yards out. That's when I saw him, guy in a ball cap, maybe late 30s, carrying what looked like an AR-10. He was just standing there scanning the horizon. I froze, heart pounding so hard I could barely hear. I hadn't made a sound, but I swear he looked right at me. Not like he saw movement, like he knew I was there. I started to belly crawl backwards, keeping my head low. I was maybe 50 yards into my retreat when I heard him behind me. You lost, rock boy. I whipped around and there he was, 20 feet away, rifle leveled, but not pointing directly at me. My hand twitched toward my hip, but I didn't go for the pistol. He would have dropped me before I cleared the holster. I raised both hands. I didn't see anything, man. I was mapping. Didn't know anyone was out here. He stared for a long moment. You saw enough. I swear I won't say a word. I'll go. Right now. He tilted his head like he was listening to something far away. Then he smiled, real slow, like it hurt his face. I'll give you 10 grand to forget this trail. I blinked. What? 10 large. You take the South Ridge, you never saw me, never come back. I nodded fast. Done. He slung the rifle across his back and tossed a small plastic bag at my feet. Cash, thick rubber bands, maybe 5 grand in each. I didn't touch it. Take it. I'm good, I said. He chuckled. Suit yourself. Then he turned around and walked away, like it was a damn Tuesday. I waited until he vanished behind the grove, and then sprinted over the ridge like hell was after me. But it didn't end there. I hiked straight through the next basin, aiming for a narrow canyon that would lead back to my truck. I figured I could make it before dark if I kept moving. Maybe 2 hours in, I stopped for water at the edge of a dry wash, legs cramping, nerves fried. That's when I saw the second figure. Up the canyon, maybe 70 yards. Not the same guy. This one was taller, built different, stood completely still, no gear, no weapon, just standing in the wash, facing me. I called out, "Hey, you all right?" No answer, didn't move. I took a step forward. He mirrored me. Another step. He matched it. Exactly. I stopped. He stopped. The sun was behind him, so I couldn't make out his face. Just the shape. Arms too long, head tilted at an unnatural angle. I turned and started moving fast, following the canyon bend. After maybe 10 minutes, I glanced back. He was closer, still silent, still following. I broke into a jog, slipping on scree, skidding around boulders. Every time I looked back, he was the same distance behind me. Not running, just walking, fast enough to keep up, like gravity didn't apply. Then I heard it, something wet, slapping the canyon walls, like raw meat hitting stone. Every time I turned, he was closer. I dropped my pack. Gun, gear, samples, all of it, just bolted. And that noise, God, that noise, like breath and chewing and something alive writhing inside something else. When I made it to the truck, the sun was dipping low. I dove inside, locked the doors, started the engine. Didn't look back, just drove. Didn't stop until I hit Fallon. I didn't report the grow, didn't collect the money. I moved my research area 100 miles east. Never went near that ridge again. Story 6. I worked a seasonal gig for the Department of Fish and Wildlife back in 2018, doing creel surveys at this tiny alpine lake in eastern Oregon. Not one of the popular ones. This place wasn't even on most maps. No campsites, no docks, no roads that went all the way. You had to hike in 7 miles from a washed-out trailhead, through beetle-kill pines and sun-bleached boulders, just to get there. I was stationed there for 3 weeks straight. No cell signal, just a radio that barely reached base. I stayed in a canvas tent and spent most days recording what little data there was, maybe 1 or 2 fishermen per week. The rest of the time, I was alone. Entire days passed without hearing another voice. I started talking out loud just to hear one. It gets in your head after a while, quiet like that. Real quiet. The kind where you can hear your own heartbeat ticking in your ears. This was late July. Thick heat during the day, freezing at night. I'd started sleeping in a hammock strung between 2 scraggly lodge poles, close to the lake where it was cooler. I kept a bear canister and some firewood nearby, but mostly just kept to myself. Reading, dozing, sometimes staring out at the lake for hours, just watching the wind make ripples. That afternoon, I must have nodded off hard. I remember hearing a kind of deep rumble just before I woke up. Something like a heavy breath through a hollow throat. When I opened my eyes, there was this shape standing over me, inches from my face. At first, I thought it was a person crouching, but its head was huge, way too big. 2 black eyes, huge and flat, like stones sunk in mud. The skin around them was grayish and stretched tight. I didn't move. I couldn't. It was staring straight at me. There was no light in its eyes, nothing, just depthless black. Its mouth opened slightly, no sound, just a long crack of blackness, like it wasn't part of the face at all. The smell hit me a second later, wet rot, like something pulled from under a frozen swamp. I don't even remember moving, but I must have kicked because the hammock flipped and I hit the ground hard. When I scrambled up, the thing was gone. Not walked away, gone, like it had never been there. I backed up toward the tent, looking in all directions. Nothing, just trees and silence. No birds, no wind, just my own breathing and that wild heartbeat in my ears. Then I heard something, hooves, slow, heavy hoofbeats, maybe 50 yards out. I turned toward the sound, thinking it might be cattle. There were free-ranging herds out here, and I'd seen some before, usually just once or twice a season. Then I saw it, a bull, but not like any bull I'd ever seen. It was too tall. The proportions were all wrong. Its legs were too long, its neck bent too low, and the horns, they curved forward and then back again, like a hook. It wasn't walking right either. It moved like it had too many joints, like its limbs were being pulled by something that didn't know how they were supposed to work. It came to the tree line and stopped, just stood there. I blinked, and I swear to God, its face looked almost human, but stretched, wrong. It was like the thing I'd seen inches from my face was wearing a bull's body like a costume. The eyes were the same, pitch black, no whites, no light, dead eyes. I yelled, something stupid like, "Hey!" or "Get!" But it didn't even flinch. It just turned its head slowly, impossibly slowly, until it was looking straight at me. Not around me, at me. It was like it knew exactly where I was before I even made a sound. Then it did something I'll never forget. It opened its mouth, not wide, just a crack, and let out this sound that wasn't a moo. It was like a long, wet breath, but under it, there was this garbled voice, like a recording played backward. Just a second of it, but I heard it. I felt it in my ribs. Then it turned and walked back into the trees. I waited maybe 10 seconds before grabbing my boots, not even tying them, and running straight toward the trailhead. I didn't stop to grab food, gear, nothing. Just ran, full sprint. I didn't even think to radio it in until I was 2 miles down and finally realized my lungs were burning. When I finally got a signal back at the ranger station, I tried to tell them what happened. But all that came out was some shaky story about a bull acting strange. They laughed it off. "You saw a big bull and got spooked," one guy said. "That's why we say don't sleep in hammocks near the tree line. You probably startled it." I didn't argue, but that wasn't a bull, and it sure as hell wasn't spooked. I quit 2 days later, didn't go back for my gear, left the tent, the stove, the hammock, everything. I don't sleep outdoors anymore. I can't even walk past a cow field without feeling my skin crawl. People still ask why I left a job like that. Quiet lake, solitude, easy work. I just tell them the same thing every time. There's things out there that don't belong, and sometimes they look right at you. Story 7. I've worked night patrols on this stretch of beach near Ponte Vedra, Florida, for 6 years now, walking the shoreline under the moonlight, looking for green turtles coming in to nest. I usually work solo, and I like it that way. No one bothering me, just the wind, the tide, and the occasional flash of bioluminescence in the surf. That night, it was mid-June, about 2 a.m., was dead quiet. It had rained earlier, so everything was soaked. The sand, the sea oats up on the dune, even the air. The kind of humidity that clings to your lungs. I had the red flashlight clipped to my belt and was crouched maybe 10 feet from the waterline, waiting. No moon, no stars, just pitch. I'd seen a big female green turtle poking her head out about 10 minutes earlier. They always hover right off the surf before committing. I was giving her time. That's when I heard it, a grunt up by the dune line. Not loud, just enough that I froze and turned my head. Probably a fox, I thought, or a raccoon. We get coyotes too, but they don't usually linger. But it didn't move on. It made that sound again. A low, breathy grunt, like someone trying to clear their throat without opening their mouth. Then a rustling, like dry palmetto fronds being pushed aside. I angled my body toward it, staying still, watching, but I couldn't see a thing. just black beyond black. The turtle never came in. She must have heard it too, skittish as hell. She dipped back into the water, and I sighed, standing up to walk southward down the beach. I figured I'd circle back later, and the sound moved with me. I walked about 30 paces, sand shifting under my boots, when I heard it again, closer. That same grunt, then a kind of garbled muttering, like someone was talking, but underwater, and not in English. I stopped cold. "Hello," I called out. Nothing. I turned on my red flashlight and swept it toward the dune. The beam lit up sand, grass, some broken driftwood, and something moved just outside the cone of light. It ducked. That's the best way I can describe it. Like it had been standing upright and dropped out of sight the second the light hit the area. Human-shaped, but wrong. Too thin. Too quick. And it didn't make a sound when it moved. Not even the crunch of dry sand. I took a step back. "Hey, this is a protected area," I said, louder now, trying to sound authoritative. Still nothing. Then as clear as day, it spoke. "Don't run." That voice, no human makes a sound like that. It was guttural, breathy, and cracked like an old radio. And it came from right up in the dune grass. Not far. Maybe 10 feet. I couldn't see a thing, but my whole body went ice cold. My hands started shaking. Then it said it again, louder. "Don't run!" I ran. I don't even remember turning around. I just bolted down the beach, stumbling in the wet sand, my flashlight swinging wildly. I could hear it moving, right behind me. Not running, but fast. Too fast. The voice followed me, shouting now. "Not yet." I lost my footing once, went down hard on my side, scrambled back up. My radio popped off my belt and vanished in the dark. I didn't care. I just kept running. After what felt like a mile, I stopped, heaving for breath, hands on my knees. I turned around, expecting it to be right there, but there was nothing. Just the sound of waves and my own heartbeat pounding in my ears. I never saw it. No tracks the next day. No sign of anything on the dunes. I filed a report about possible trespassers, but I didn't mention the voice. People already think working the beach alone at night makes you weird. But I know what I heard, and I haven't gone back to that stretch since. Story 8. I live in Missoula now, but when I was 25, I did this long solo bikepacking trip. 5,000 miles or so across the western U.S. I mostly wild camped to save money. No reservations, no designated campgrounds. I just slipped into the woods every night, far enough from roads and towns that no one would know I was there. There's one night I don't talk about much. I've got fun stories about storms, rattlesnakes, even a close call with a mountain lion. But this was different. This was wrong. I don't know what it was, and I hate that I don't. I was alone. That's what keeps me up some nights. I was in northeastern Utah, maybe 20 miles outside of Flaming Gorge. It was the tail end of fall, nights already dropping below freezing, leaves mostly down. I'd made it up a long, winding Forest Service road that switched back through aspen groves and thick pine. I'd seen no cars all afternoon. Honestly, it was perfect. No cell reception, but I didn't expect any. Just before sunset, I found this sloped clearing near the top of a ridge. It faced west, so I'd get some last light. The nearest trailhead was miles down. I leaned my bike against a tree, unrolled my bivy sack, and started boiling water for dinner. Now I'd done this hundreds of times, alone in the middle of nowhere, eating freeze-dried food with dirt under my nails, the cold creeping in. But that night was off from the start. The silence wasn't peaceful. It was heavy. I remember the way the flame from my stove looked wrong. It flickered like there was wind, but there wasn't. The trees weren't moving, not even a breath. I was eating when I noticed the smell. Wet fur, like a dog that had been swimming in a swamp. It came from downslope. I figured elk, maybe. I'd seen a few earlier that day, so I just sat still, waiting for the sound of hooves or heavy steps. Nothing. Then there was this sound, somewhere between a grunt and a cough. Not loud, but deep, like it came from something big. It wasn't right. It wasn't a bear. It wasn't an elk. It sounded like something trying to mimic one. I sat frozen, spork halfway to my mouth, staring downslope. The light was almost gone, but I could still see the edges of trees, the rise and fall of the terrain. Then something moved. I don't know how to explain it. It didn't move like an animal. It shifted. It was tall, too tall, maybe 7 feet, but weirdly thin. And it didn't walk through the trees. It glided. No branch snapping, no crunch of leaves. "Hey," I called out before I could stop myself. It froze, dead still. I couldn't see a face or eyes or even limbs, really. Just this long, dark shape. It was crouched low now, but it hadn't made a sound. I stood up slowly, not turning my back to it. My instinct was to make noise, scare it off like you would a bear. But my gut said don't. My gut was screaming, actually. It started clicking, soft like two stones tapped together. Click, 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 then faster. Click, click, click. It sounded like it was right beside me, but it hadn't moved. I backed toward my bike. My stove was still hissing. My food was half eaten in my lap. I'd never packed up camp so fast in my life. I left the water bottle, left my mug, shoved everything into my dry bag and strapped it onto the rack with shaking hands. The thing didn't move, just stayed crouched at the tree line, head cocked like it was watching me, and it kept clicking. God, that sound, it's still stuck in my brain. When I finally clipped my helmet, I did the dumbest thing. I turned on my headlamp. Its eyes lit up. Not like animal eyes. There wasn't that familiar glint. These were flat and gray, and the pupils didn't reflect. They just absorbed the light, two round voids set too wide apart. It stood up. I hit the pedals so hard I nearly crashed. No switchbacks now. I took the fire road straight down, bunny hopping over ruts and potholes, barely braking. I didn't stop riding until I reached a tiny pullout where I got 2 bars of cell service. I sent my brother a message with my location and locked myself in the pit toilet for the night. I never went back for my mug, never told my family the real version, just said I heard wolves or something. But I know what elk sound like. I know how bears move. That thing was neither. I was out there alone, miles from another soul, and something was watching me that wasn't supposed to exist. Story 9. I live just outside Sacramento now, but when I was a teenager, I spent one summer week in the Mendocino Forest for Boy Scout camp. I didn't care much for the whole Boy Scout thing. Merit badges, knots, fire drills. It all felt like homework in the woods. I only went because a couple of my buddies convinced me, said it'd be fun. No phones, no computers, nothing but trees, tents, and endless walking trails. Not my scene, but I figured, why not? There was this stargazing event on the fourth night. We were supposed to hike out to the astronomy field, about a mile and a half from the main camp, somewhere along the northeast ridge. Thing is, the map they gave us wasn't great. Just a sketch, really. Some trails marked out in dotted lines and landmarks like Creek Crossing or Old Oak. It was already dark when we decided to head out. Dumb idea, I know that now. 5 of us with flashlights and no real sense of where we were going. The woods out there are dense. Not just trees, but brush, downed branches, moss hanging like cobwebs. Our lights only lit up maybe 10, 15 feet ahead. Anything past that was just black. We kept walking anyway, following what we hoped was the right trail. Then we hit a fork we didn't recognize. One path sloped down toward what sounded like running water. The other climbed upward and disappeared behind a cluster of thick trees. "I think it's up the hill," Mark said, already moving. "Pretty sure it's by the creek," I said. Nobody listened. So we followed Mark, uphill and deeper into the dark. 15 minutes later, we knew we were lost. The trail just ended at a bunch of rocks and roots. No clearing, no telescope silhouettes, just forest. I checked my watch. 9:46 p.m. We'd been walking for almost an hour. That's when the air started feeling off, like heavier somehow. No wind, no crickets. The woods had gone dead quiet. I didn't even notice the silence until Kevin whispered, "Do you guys hear that?" We all stopped. Nothing. Just the sound of us breathing. Then I saw them. Eyes, pairs of them. Low to the ground, just inside the tree line, maybe 20 feet out. I counted 4 pairs. Not moving, not blinking, just watching. Coyotes, I said, though I didn't really believe it. What if it's mountain lions, Josh muttered. They follow you before they attack, right? Shut up, Kevin said. We started backing up, slow and steady. The eyes didn't move. I looked again. There were more. Six pairs now, then seven. What the hell, I breathed. They weren't spaced right. Too symmetrical. Too still. And they were higher now, some of them. Eye level with us. Like something had stood up. Let's go. Now. Mark turned and started fast walking back the way we came. We all followed, heads down, not speaking. The trail had changed. I swear to God, it wasn't the same. There was no fork, no downslope, just a straight, narrow path surrounded by trees that looked wrong, like they'd shifted, grew closer, pressed in. Our lights caught the bark, pale gray with what looked like long scrapes down the trunks. Vertical, fresh. Then something whispered. It wasn't one of us. It came from the side, low and hoarse, like wind through teeth. Wait, Kevin said. Did you hear that? We stopped again. No, I said, even though I had. We shouldn't have stopped, because that's when everything changed. My flashlight flickered, and then gone. Dark. Not just mine. All of them. Five beams snapped out at once. Panic hit like a wave. We screamed, fumbling for batteries, shaking the lights, yelling at each other. That's when I heard the breathing. Heavy, wet, right behind me. I turned, nothing. But I swear, I could feel it. Inches away, heat on my neck. Then Josh screamed, like really screamed. We turned and saw him, on the ground, crawling backward, flashlight somehow working again, and aimed straight at a shape just inside the trees. It was tall. Wrong tall. Like too skinny, but too stretched. Pale skin, long arms, and the head. Oh, God, the head wasn't shaped right. It didn't have a face. It had eyes, just eyes, six of them, all in rows, blinking at different times. We ran. Didn't care which direction, didn't care if it was the right way. We just ran, crashing through underbrush, not even staying together. Branches whipped me in the face. I think I lost a shoe. I didn't stop. I heard something crashing behind me, big. It didn't move like an animal. It moved like it was testing how to move. Stumbling. Fast, erratic. Then nothing. Just the sound of my own ragged breath and my feet slamming the dirt trail. I saw a light. An orange glow. Campfire. I burst out of the woods like I was on fire. Tumbled into the open and looked up to see one of the adult leaders standing there with a lantern. You okay? He asked. I didn't answer. Kevin came out behind me, then Josh, sobbing. Mark was last, covered in scratches, pale as hell. We never found out what it was. Nobody believed us, of course. Said we spooked ourselves. Maybe saw a deer. Maybe an owl. They didn't see the scratches on the trees. They didn't see what we saw. We never found the trail we took that night again. We tried once in daylight. It wasn't there. The astronomy field? Turns out it was actually down by the creek. Exactly where I said it was. We never went back. I never joined another camping trip again. Story 10. I don't really talk about this anymore, mostly because I don't like the way people look at me when I do, but sometimes it keeps me up. So I'll say it here, just once. I grew up in a town that nobody's ever heard of, northern Arkansas, tucked between nothing and nowhere. There's a long back road just past Miller's Creek that no one maintains anymore. Overgrown, all potholes and mud in spring. I used to drive it late at night when I needed to clear my head. No one ever came down that way. That's where I saw it, the house. I wasn't out looking for anything weird. I had just left my shift at the gas station, 2 a.m., and decided to take the long way home. I don't remember noticing the place before, but that night the clouds broke just enough to let the moonlight spill down, and there it was. This crooked two-story farmhouse set back behind a rusted gate. Looked like it had been abandoned for decades. Except, something felt off immediately. The gate had a new chain on it, shiny and tight. The weeds had grown up around the fence, but the path leading to the house was mostly clear, like someone still used it. And on the second floor, dead center in the house, was a window that looked way too clean. The glass caught the moonlight differently from the rest. That's what drew my eyes up there. I froze when I saw the shirts, two of them, white button-downs hanging side by side on a clothesline strung inside the room. They looked freshly laundered, creased, spotless, bright in the moonlight. But everything else about the house screamed decay. The wood was splitting, the paint peeling, one of the shutters was hanging by a hinge. I stood by the fence for a solid minute, just watching. "Why would anyone dry clothes inside an abandoned house?" I muttered. That's when I made my first mistake. I stepped over the gate. The lock was only looped through, not fastened, so I just lifted the chain and pushed it open. The air past that fence was colder somehow. Still, I told myself I was just going to take a quick look and snap a pic. Something about those shirts didn't sit right, and I figured I'd post it online, get some reactions. Typical idiot behavior. I walked the path up to the front porch, which groaned under my weight. The door wasn't boarded up, just slightly ajar. Inside, it smelled like rot and something else. Damp laundry, maybe? The floor creaked under my boots as I stepped in. Dust covered everything except a narrow trail, as if someone had walked through recently. I didn't call out. I don't know why. Something about the silence told me not to. I made my way through the hallway past a staircase. That's when I saw it. The puddle, just at the foot of the stairs. A small pool of water, and above it, drips trailing up the steps. Not down, upper, like something wet had walked up the stairs and never came back down. I don't scare easy, but that messed with me. I almost turned around. Almost. But I was too curious. I climbed the stairs slowly, one hand on the rail, the other holding up my phone flashlight. The wood was damp beneath my boots. At the top, the hallway split left and right. The clean window was to the left. That's where I went. The door to that room was closed, but not latched. I nudged it open with my foot. The room was wrong. It had this strange glow. I thought it was just the moonlight bouncing off the white shirts at first, but the light didn't feel right. It didn't seem to come from anywhere. The clothesline was there, strung across the room. The shirts were exactly as I saw them, pristine, unmoving. No breeze, no sway. But it wasn't the shirts that got me. It was the figure behind them. At first, I thought it was a reflection, like maybe someone was standing outside the window behind me, but there was no one outside. I was three rooms deep into the house. Then I thought it was a shadow, but it didn't move when I shifted. It just stood there. Tall, lanky, no face, just a blur where the head should be. Arms dangling too low, just behind the shirts like it was hiding or waiting. And its chest, this part's hard to explain, its chest looked wet. Like soaked fabric clinging to skin, just barely visible between the shirts. Like it had been standing in the rain for hours. I didn't breathe. I couldn't. I just stood there, frozen, because I knew deep down that if I moved or made a sound, it would react. Then the shirts twitched, only slightly, like someone had gently touched them from behind. One swayed left, the other right, and then I heard it, the sound of dripping, slow, rhythmic, like water hitting the floor. I looked down. There were fresh drops at my feet, but I wasn't wet. I didn't wait any longer. I turned and bolted. Down the stairs, nearly slipping on the damp steps. The air felt heavier the closer I got to the door, like it was trying to slow me down. The front door slammed shut behind me on its own the moment I cleared the porch. I ran. I don't even remember unlocking the gate. I just remember running until I hit gravel, and then pavement. I didn't look back once. By the time I got home, my shirt was damp at the collar. Just the collar. And I swear to God, I hadn't sweat a drop. I told my cousin the next morning. He's a deputy, so I figured he might know something about the place. He just looked at me real quiet and said, "That house? That's a death certificate waiting to happen. They found a drifter dead in there last year. Drowned. In an upstairs room. No water source." He told me never to go back. I didn't argue.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy and features real testimonials.
This was our first time trying therapy, and honestly, it was long overdue. Looking back, we just wish we had started sooner.
Regain's qualified therapists help couples when they can't get there on their own.
We thought it was intimacy issues, but Andrea helped us uncover a deeper root cause we hadn't even realized was there.
Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. Regain, couples therapy that works.
Looking to buy your dream home or rent that perfect apartment? With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Set up your gotta-have-it wish list, and Redfin will send you real-time notifications for properties that match. And when you're ready to see it in person, scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Thinking about selling? Redfin can do that too. In fact, Redfin agents close twice as many deals as other agents, so they know how to get the best price for your home. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin charges half of what others often charge. So you could save big, like really big. Last year, Redfin saved home sellers $118 million. So whether you're buying, renting, or selling, Redfin's ready to help you win. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.